from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. It's almost over. The polls open tomorrow. The presidential race appears nail-bitingly close. We've had, what, 4 years to debate the issues? Today, everybody wants to know the outcome, the array of voters and intentions actually headed to the polls, the final profile of the electorate, as well as we can know it, as it chooses Obama versus Romney. This hour on Point, top pollsters and strategists on what's coming tomorrow at the polls. You can join the conversation. What do you see coming in this vote? Does it look like a toss-up where you stand or not? What's the conversation in your neighborhood, in your house? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We'll hear in this hour from the two camps, Obama and Romney, on how they see the electoral map shaping up. But first, top pollsters. Joining me now from Washington is John Cohen, director of polling and polling editor at The Washington Post. He created the Post's polling blog, Behind the Numbers. The latest Washington Post ABC News polling out yesterday has President Obama and Governor Romney deadlocked nationally at 48% each. John Cohen, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
And with me from Washington, Mark Blumenthal, senior polling editor of The Huffington Post. He was founding editor of pollster.com. Huffington Post acquired it in 2010. His latest polling shows Obama up 1 point nationally and poised to squeak past the 270 electoral vote count needed to win. We'll test and unpack all of this. Mark Blumenthal, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
John, take us through the numbers first. Nationally, your poll, the polls of polls, what's it look like?
Well, it couldn't be closer. You know, we've been doing daily tracking between the Washington Post and ABC News for 18 waves now. What we released yesterday was kind of through 17 consecutive nights. And actually, what we had released yesterday was 49% for Obama, 48% Romney. But it, that was just a streak of 11 straight days where both candidates were at one of those numbers or the other. And if you go across all 17 nights, the difference is really, you know, this is a margin of error election no matter how you cut it, but it's really an infinitesimal difference between the two candidates. Across the 17 waves, you know, we're at 48.57 for Obama, 48.56 for Romney. That's not to express, you know, any kind of false precision.
Yeah.
All polls have margins of sampling error that far exceed the hundredth of the percentage points. But this is really a razor's edge election.
And when you go, we'll come to Mark and how he interprets the electoral vote. What's your interpretation when you get down to that level?
Well, I should clarify.
Oh, yes,
sorry,
Mark. Sorry.
What we do at HuffPost Pollster is not our own surveys, but we take the polls that John and others do and aggregate them.
Absolutely.
So our current national estimate is pretty much consistent with the results from Washington Post ABC. It's 1 point in Obama's favor, a tiny bit higher than it had been as recently as a few days ago. And within the so-called battleground states, President Obama's had a small but fairly consistent advantage in states like Ohio, Nevada, Iowa, and Wisconsin of 2 to 3, and in some cases 4 percentage points across all the polls aggregated together. That appears to be enough to get him the 270-plus electoral votes to win.
So in your poll of polls, you're seeing that 270-plus. We'll look at exactly what the number is. John, what about when you look across at your own poll and across the polls at this electoral vote swing state question, what do you see?
Well, very much the same thing. I mean, we'll say, you know, our final polling here is national in orientation. We can divide across the so-called battleground states. Everyone divides them somewhat differently. And among the 8 states that the Washington Post considers toss-ups, we have, again, you know, very closely divided electorate with a big difference, and I'm sure we'll talk about, between early voters and those who will have waited until tomorrow to cast their ballots. We did a separate Washington Post poll of Virginia, that key battleground state, last week, and we had Obama with a narrow 4-point edge there. There's a new NBC Wall Street Journal Marist poll out today with Obama up just 1, potentially continuing a trend toward narrowing in that state. But, you know, we will see.
No, so we've got people predicting all kinds of things. Newt Gingrich says, you know, 53-47 Romney, 300 electoral plus votes, near landslide for Romney. People talking about organic enthusiasm in the Republican camp that will not show up until tomorrow. I mean, Mark, if the so you've got the electoral vote going to Obama. Do you put a number on that, or is it just more than 270, or do you put a specific number on it, Mark?
Well, what we've tried to do, if you just assume that all the polls, all of them, good, bad, and indifferent, mm-hmm. are, when you put them together, that they're unbiased, that they have an accurate measure of the election.
If we assume that, yeah.
Right, so that would be almost, I mean, virtually 100%, but we know that's not the way things work. When yep. we try to build in the historical pattern, the typical room for error that national surveys have shown, that drops to about 90%. Now, that's just, you know, a model.
90% accuracy, are you saying?
No, that means that there's about a 90% probability that Obama would win. It means if we, that, you know, there's about a 1 in 10 chance that the polls have enough, collectively, enough bias in them that it could conceivably swing to Romney.
So very close, you're saying, with your interpretation, but 90% sounds high,
to
any lay ear. And what about the chances of that being just wrong? What about the chances that you guys are somehow, you know, just reading the electoral, making assumptions collectively in all these polls that get it wrong?
Put it another way, it would take a sort of a consistent misfire across all of these surveys that's not totally without precedent. In 1996, for example, national polls, the average of them had Bill Clinton's percentage right, had Ross Perot's percentage right, but were about 4 points low on Robert Dole. That just narrowed Bill Clinton's margin of victory. If for some reason there were a similar error on average, that would be enough to put Romney ahead.
John, what about it? Where you come down on the electoral vote, looking across all these polls, what you're guessing, and what about the possibility that the polls are just wrong?
Well, of course, it's a real possibility. And again, this is a margin of error election. The margin of sampling error is a real concept that we sometimes forget. Even mm-hmm. the Pew Research Center poll, excellent poll that was released yesterday, their final estimate of 50% for President Obama and 47% for Mitt Romney carries a margin of sampling error of 2.2 percentage points among likely voters. That margin of sampling error, of course, applies to both of those numbers.
Yep.
So the chances that Obama has a real lead are real, but they are not, you know, at the traditional 95% confidence level that we like to speak with as pollsters. So we're talking about a really close election. Mark's point is an excellent one. I mean, what we to have this election be wrong, you know, kind of consistently across all of these polls would be rather remarkable. So although the margin of sampling error in any one poll, you know, kind of makes it a true toss-up election, the consistency is notable, and they would have to be biased systematically across all of these polls for the outcome to be different. Now, of course, that is possible. I just don't see at the moment any reason to doubt, you know, kind of the broad sweep of the polls. That said, we're talking about, you know, 1 or 2 points either way. We also have just this week, of course, the Hurricane Sandy in the Mid-Atlantic census division, you know, that if turnout drops 20% in those regions, that hurts Obama's chances in the popular vote. Of course, it doesn't affect the outcome of the election on the electoral college basis, but just in terms of the popular vote that we're talking about estimating, that could make a big difference.
Well, 90% chance, 50 to 47% chance with a margin of error that's right in there. And talk about a squeaker. Mark?
I was going to say there's sort of another way to look at it and mm-hmm. amplify John's point. On any one survey, mm-hmm. absolutely, nationally, the race is within the margin of error of any one survey. If you look at Ohio, which I think just about everyone agrees is the key tipping point state, the winner of the election will likely be the candidate that wins that state. There were 11 different surveys released since Friday alone. They had 10 of the 11 have Obama ahead by margins of anywhere from 2 to 8 points in one case, which is ridiculously high. One was tied. If Ohio were really a tie, if it were really, mm-hmm. if we could measure things that precisely, and we knew it were just a, you know, 48-48 tie, then and every poll were unbiased, they would be like flipping a coin. It should come out, some of them should have Romney ahead by
yep,
a little, some
yep.
of them should have Obama ahead by a little. That's random noise. But in this case, 10 out of 11 have come up, if you will, heads.
But how can you come up with the 90% Obama prognostication here and Pew comes up with 50%? That's a big difference.
Well, that's one is that we're looking at not one great big survey with 2,500 respondents, but every survey. We're doing in a sort of more complicated way what I just did simply with that mm-hmm. coin flip metaphor. We're taking every survey and putting it together and saying and doing, you know, what a social scientist might call a meta-analysis, putting them all together and finding and quantifying both the size of the differences, the chance of it being right, and also trying to build in in a rough way, the historical pattern for error. Now, just because polls, you know, past performance is no guarantee of future results. We have the highest number of Americans who don't have landline phones. The lowest response rates we've had. I mean, every election, that's true.
Yeah, I can't imagine how you get a legitimate sample with all the welter of people's resistance to answering any kind of phone and landlines out the window and all the rest. I mean, it just seems impossible.
Well, it's more challenging than before. You know, the good news of this is it's not like everything was perfect 4 years ago and just suddenly we turned a corner and fell off a cliff. All of these trends have been moving slowly. And the remarkable thing in 2008 was with the same problems, just in less degree, polls, if you average them all out, had virtually no, I mean, zero bias. If you took the average of the national surveys over the last 3 weeks of the campaign, you would have, and just simply average them, you didn't need a fancy model, you would have had the national popular vote estimated to within about 1/10 of 1%.
John, so in these last days, John, when we hear the candidates beseeching they're supposed to get out to the polls, can that beseeching make a difference? Does it depend on that last ounce of enthusiasm from each party?
Well, it sure can. You know, in our battleground analysis of our national tracking poll, you know, President Obama's campaign has contacted 38% of all likely voters in those 8 states. Mitt Romney has contacted 37. So that they're kind of, the outreach is tremendous. And what we've seen consistently in Virginia, Ohio, and Florida when we did state polling there, and nationally in these battleground states, when the Obama campaign reaches voters, it makes a difference in terms of their certainty of voting and how, you know, kind of, and whether they support him. And so young people in particular.
Yeah. John Cohen, hold the thought right there. Mark Blumenthal, we're looking at the polls and Election Day on Election Eve. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking today about what tomorrow, Election Day, may bring with top pollsters and party strategists. It is Election Eve 2012. Here was Mitt Romney yesterday in Newport News, Virginia.
Let's walk together. Let's start anew. America is coming back strong. We're going to help our people who need help with good jobs. Thanks so much, you guys. Virginia is the best. Thank you so very much.
And here's the incumbent, President Obama, in Aurora, Colorado.
If you're willing to work with me and knock on some doors with me, make some phone calls with me, turn out for me, Colorado, we will win this state. We'll win this election.
This is it. After all these months and years of campaigning, it is tomorrow. John Cohen's been with us. He is Director of Polling and Polling Editor at The Washington Post. Mark Blumenthal's here, Senior Polling Editor at The Huffington Post. And with us right now, campaign strategists from the Republican and Democratic sides of this contest. Kim Alfano joins us from Alexandria, Virginia, GOP strategist, President and CEO of Alfano Communications. Kim, welcome back to On Point. Great to have you.
Hi, Tom.
And Anita Dunn is with us, former White House Communications Director for President Barack Obama until November 2009, Senior Advisor to the Obama Presidential Campaign, Managing Director at SJD Knickerbocker Communications and Political Consulting Firm Big Wheel. Anita Dunn, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on, Tom.
All right, Anita, first to you. These polls are looking just as close as we can imagine nationally, and yet you've got people saying Obama's got it. Now, some say 50% chance, some say 90% chance, and you've got a lot of Republicans saying, forget it, we've got it. What do you see on Election Eve, Anita?
Well, Tom, I think we're feeling good about where we are, particularly in the battleground states, the really critical states that the president needs to carry in order to be reelected. But all of our attention right now is to getting out our vote. I was listening to John and Mark talk about the importance of voter turnout and the ground game that the president's campaign has built in order to turn out our vote is really pretty extraordinary. And that's what our attention is in this final 24 hours of this campaign, because there really is a clear choice for voters here. It's whether we continue to move forward and build on the progress that we have been making, or whether we go back to the policies that created the mess to begin with.
Newt Gingrich says the polls don't get it. Mitt Romney's got a near landslide coming, 53-47, more than 300 electoral votes. Of course, anybody can say anything, but you know there is a lot of fire in the belly of the Republican camp on this day.
Well, I think there's also a great deal of enthusiasm for the president and for his campaign and for continuing the progress and also for not turning back. And that is really the choice that people are being faced with. And that is why I think you see the crowds the president is drawing and the early vote, which is extraordinary in some of these states. In Ohio, for instance, you know, we have a 2-1 lead in the early vote. These are really significant, and it means that Governor Romney will have to have a huge victory at the polling place tomorrow in order to catch up with what the early vote in these states where people have stood in line for hours.
Kim, I'm going to come to you. Anita, help us see this through your eyes. What's the state or states you're going to be watching most closely? What's the Obama camp's greatest vulnerability tomorrow? Where will you be holding your breath most tightly as we watch the results come in tomorrow, Anita?
Well, I think Kim and I are going to be watching the same states, and Boston and Chicago are going to be watching the same states. It hasn't exactly been a secret what the major battlegrounds are. If you look at this last day of campaigning, for instance, Governor Romney is closing his campaign out in Virginia, Florida, and Ohio, three states he absolutely has to carry to have any chance at winning the Electoral College. I think that everyone, all eyes will be on Ohio. All eyes will be on Iowa, Wisconsin, Virginia, Florida, Colorado. You know, the battleground states have been the battleground states here.
Kim Alfano, what do you see unfolding? You've got these polls of polls saying a squeaker, but goes to Obama. How do you see it?
Well, I mean, I think there's the under, you know, nobody knows what's going to happen. You know, and I'm not a poster, I'm a media person, so I was told there'd be no math. But, you know, we have to indulge in the math a little bit. You have to kind of look at the crosstabs, I think, in this election and some of the underpinnings. You know, Romney has had solid leads in the independents throughout all of these states, in Virginia especially, but in Iowa and in Ohio and all of these different states. And you win when you win independents. The gold standard, the people they're trying to talk to have solidly been with Romney. On the economy, he's been winning the message. His message has been resonating. People have been consistently saying in these polls that he's the man that they want to foster the economy. If this is an election about the economy, Romney's their guy. And I think when you look at those sort of key underpinnings to these polls, there's hope there for the Republican Party. There's solid enthusiasm. And then when you add to that what, you know, Obama used to say, you know, look at our enthusiasm, look at the size of our crowds. I mean, look at the enthusiasm for Romney in these last days. Look at the size of the crowds. They're enormous. You go everywhere you go where Romney is, the crowds are rabidly excited. They see the change coming. They feel the change coming. And there is an enthusiasm among his voters that is tangible.
So how do you read these bottom line poll numbers then, Kim? What do you make of that? You're saying you see underpinnings and you see, I don't know, interior polling that shows you a reason for hope. And then you get these bottom lines that say, well, but it's still, the electoral map goes to Obama. How do you reconcile those?
I don't know that the electoral map goes to Obama. I think that, you know, that we're in the margin of error in all of these states, as we've said. I mean, I don't think that you can discount a state like, say, Iowa, for instance, where, you know, you've had 120,000 vote registration swing towards Republicans, which you haven't had in the past. So, you know, you're polling with outdated data. You don't know how that's going to turn out. There's going to be an extraordinarily enthusiastic, you know, difference in the voting among white older voters versus younger and more minority voters. They're disaffected this time. White older voters are super, super energized to go vote, and they're the ones you can count on. Those are going to be much more likely to vote Republican, and they're much, you know, they're going to be critical in states like Iowa and Wisconsin and Colorado and places where, you know, you're going to have some surprises. You're going to see margins swing, I think.
John Cohen, is this the white voter day in the sun tomorrow? Is this the older white voter coming to the rescue of Mitt Romney?
Well, certainly the big question is kind of how this electorate compares to the one in 2008 that President Obama won so handily. At that time, 74% of the electorate, according to the exit polls, was non-Hispanic white. That's a number that, you know, has been under debate. You know, kind of the population has continued to become less white over those past 4 years, and kind of how the makeup of tomorrow's election will determine a lot of this the outcome, and particularly in these swing states. We've been running about similarly in both Virginia and nationally, kind of the, as a percentage of white as 2008, even though the population has continued to shift. And so it will make a big difference. Obama has been performing in the high 30s against Romney among white voters. Strategists commonly think that he needs to be at 40 or better, come tomorrow.
Anita Dunn, do you see your minority vote getting out in the portion that you need? We've heard these reports out of Miami-Dade already of difficulty with early voting there. What about turnout when it comes to, different sectors, demographics?
Oh, I think the challenge that the Republican Party faces in the future, if they continue to be a party that Kim described as one that depends on whiter, older voters, is significant because the country has changed and the country continues to change.
But the future right now is tomorrow.
I think that what we're seeing, if you look at any of these early vote lines, I can tell you personally, my own state, which is not a battleground state of Maryland, the lines for voting were extraordinary in this state, and that it was a very broad and diverse group of people waiting hours to vote, and we're seeing that in so many of these early vote states. I think that what we will see is an electorate that continues to change as the country continues to change. But, every election, Tom, is its own self. This isn't 2008. It's not 2004. It's not 2000, right? The country is changing, and I think that what you will see is a continued change demographically in this, in the electorate, and that is an advantage for President Obama, who really has tried to speak to 100% of this country as opposed to a fraction of it.
Let's go to our callers. Brentwood, Tennessee, Amanda's calling. Hi, Amanda, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
I'm voting for Obama tomorrow, but I live in a red state of Tennessee, and so sometimes it's a little disheartening knowing that my vote is not going to count tomorrow, but I'm still going to be voting anyway, and hopefully everybody I know in the swing votes in the swing states like Ohio will be voting Obama's way. But it is sometimes frustrating the way the electoral math works out.
Yeah, you're in a place on the map where it's not going to count for you. And what about the projections? Do you feel in your gut it's a toss-up, Amanda, or does it look one way or another to you?
I think Obama will squeak in. In some ways, I do see, at least the talk I hear from a lot of my Republican friends, is not so much pro-Romney as anti-Obama. And that was the problem that Kerry had, I think, in the 2004 election, and Bush still won. And so I'm thinking that is what may help, and I'm hoping that the young voters and everybody who voted for Obama come out again. Because it is right, there is a huge demographic switch, but I think that the enthusiasm, at least here in Tennessee, a lot of the enthusiasm for Romney is not pro-Romney himself, it's more just, we hate Obama.
And Amanda wishing that her vote was in a swing state tomorrow. Of course, you've got 40-plus states where they're not in that final really embattled contest. Amanda, thanks. Audrey in Newton, Massachusetts. Audrey, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have two quick questions. One is that I've heard somewhere that they don't actually count absentee ballots unless it's really close. I want to know if that's true because I have done absentee balloting, before. And my other question is tomorrow night, I actually don't own a television, so I have to go to a bar to watch the thing. And I was wondering, since I have to work on Wednesday morning, once the returns come in for Ohio, the Midwest, basically, Ohio, Iowa, and Wisconsin, if that's in the bag, can I go to bed?
That's a great question. That is the big question, and especially big this year. Mark Blumenthal, what about it? When could we know? I mean, this looks like we may not know until, Wednesday or Thursday or next month. I don't know. But
right.
What about the outcome here? What can Audrey look for at the TV down at the bar? Will she know before the bars close?
Well, let's first reassure Audrey that every single absentee ballot in the United States will be counted. That rumor that you may have heard is utterly untrue. There is a procedure which may become an issue in states like Ohio where there's a provisional ballot. And what that means is if you, say, requested an absentee ballot ahead of time and then show up at your polling place and they have a little check to make sure you don't vote twice, you will cast what's called a provisional ballot, and it will be set aside, and it will be counted after the clerks make sure that she didn't vote twice, and they'll take the one that was cast at the polling place. There were quite a few of those in 2004 and 2008, not enough to change the outcome of the election. But if in Ohio the count tonight is very, very close, we may have to wait for those provisional ballots to be counted. They swung, I can't remember, perhaps Anita will remember the exact number, but they had a net advantage for both Barack Obama and John Kerry because there were a lot more of them cast in urban areas.
And if we have
Ohio.
To wait, how long? Hours? Days?
Days.
Days.
A week or so, yeah.
I mean, that's kind of unimaginable. John Cohen, can you picture the whole country sitting around for a week waiting for the outcome?
It's certainly hard to imagine. I mean, I believe they're not counting those provisional ballots in Ohio until the 17th. But they may have changed that. So it could be quite a while. Of course, election procedure varies state by state. You know, Virginia, you know, one of the first states to close tomorrow evening at 7 p.m., you know, they always count all of their ballots on election night. So we'll have some early indicators from there and from North Carolina. But you know, we do have to wait for Ohio and Florida and others to kind of really get a strong sense of what the ultimate outcome
could be. Could be a long night, a long month. Pete in Stoneham, Massachusetts. Pete, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
With all due respect to your esteemed callers, I have a question about what we're even doing talking about polling in the first place. So if we can kind of step back and ask that question. I'm wondering this. This focus on polling has been so extensive through this electoral season, I think that's without a doubt. I wonder if that's for our gratification as observers because we want to peek at how this might turn out in the end. Is this maybe trying to illuminate for us things that the campaigns need to focus on? And I might throw a wrinkle in on that last point. If it is, if we are so interested in polls because we want to know what the campaigns need to focus on, how do I reconcile that Joe Public seems not to want candidates who speak only to polls? So what do we make?
What are the campaigns really looking at here? I mean, I'll speak first for right here, PETA, at the show. You know, we're for like 4 years or 14 months, however you want to count it, we've looked at issue. Now the vote is tomorrow. And because it's so close, I think people really are focused on where does this thing go? That's our goal in looking at the polls right now. Of course, we'll have the outcome, but here we are, months and years on the issues. Kim, at this point, to Pete's question, what in the polls are the campaigns most closely looking at, Kim Alfano?
Well, I think that at this point they've kind of gone beyond the polls. I mean, they're into their turnout models and they're into their GOTV programs. I would say at this point they've gone beyond a day-to-day poll, and they're already doing their ground game and their poll is a canvassing of their turnout model. Anita would know better than me in a presidential level, but you know, I don't think they're watching TV.
Anita, we assume there's a very, very fine-grained polls going on here. Does it get down to neighborhood, like where to go to get the vote out at this point?
It gets down to household.
It does.
It gets down to husband and wife. It gets down to anybody who's over 18. They have. They have all manner of smartphone and regular phone and door knocking and God knows what else to get people out and to turn them out. And the difference in approach is a big deal this year because Republicans have said that they are turning out they've turned out for their early voting, their lower propensity voters, and the Democrats have made a big deal of how they've turned out, a higher margin of voters for Obama, but Republicans don't tend to want to vote early. It's something in our psyche, I suppose, but we're going to have the voters that have turned out early for us are our lower propensity voters, people who voted in fewer elections in their past history. So they're newer for us. Our highest propensity voters are the ones that will turn out on election day, and that's a big deal for us. So, we're excited about the numbers that we've been able to turn out early. They're higher than our margins in the past, and they're meeting all the goals that we've wanted them to meet. So I know that it sounds that, anybody can spin anything, and Anita and I are paid to do that, I suppose. But, in terms of the way we've approached and looked at our early vote, I'm not part of the Romney campaign, but I know the Romney campaign is excited.
Excited on both sides, close as can be. Kim Alfano, GOP strategist with us from Alexandria, Virginia, and Anita Dunn, tip-top Obama advisor. Thanks to both of you for being with us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking about what tomorrow, Election Day, may bring with top pollsters and party strategists this hour. John Cohen is with us from the Washington Post, heads up their polling operation. Mark Blumenthal here, senior polling editor at the Huffington Post. Let's go to Joseph in White House, Tennessee. Joseph, what do you see?
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on your show.
Sure.
I see that Mitt Romney is going to be the next president.
What's the evidence? What are you looking at, Joseph?
Well, I'm going to tell you why I feel the way I do is just a second, and I'll explain. Mitt Romney, he has godly values. He's a successful governor and a successful businessman as well. And he's a real American. He's against killing babies. And he believes that God put Adam and Eve in the garden, not Adam and Steve.
So when you look around, we got your list, Joseph, but what's the evidence you see that it's going to be people lining up for that profile as you describe it and as you embrace it, as opposed to President Obama? You see lots of people putting their hand up for him as well.
Well, I understand that. And I understand and I know I've been following this a close race.
No question about it. No question. And we hear what we got it. We got what you believe. Here's a little bit of that Romney camp. This was in Mooresville, Pennsylvania, with their message on President Obama. Send him home.
Send him home! Send him home! Send him home! Send him home!
You're singing your song there, Joseph. On the other hand, here's an Obama rally in Cincinnati, Ohio yesterday. Well, you hear the chant. Send him home 4 more years. Jill in Clinton, Iowa. Jill, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you think,
Jill? I live, I guess, in a battleground state, although eastern Iowa is a little less conservative than western Iowa, so it's often gone either different ways in different elections. I live in Clinton County, work in Scott County. I'm a strong supporter of Obama. I just sense quite a difference this year compared to 2008. Lived in the same place, just with how vocal the Republicans are and how enthusiastic and the intensity of anti-Obama feeling, I find it kind of frightening because I don't really understand it because it seems very misguided to me. But the point is I sense a difference both from OFE and yard signs, letters to the editor, what I see on Facebook. I see Romney signs all over the place in both Clinton and Scott counties and for Romney and not as many as I would expect for Obama, because I know there are Obama supporters around.
So you're supporting Obama. Does it leave you doubting your candidate's chances here, Jill? Or where do your feelings come down, how it's likely to go?
I do. I am concerned about it. I guess I won't really be surprised either way is my feeling. I mean, I have no idea what will happen. I can't predict that. And I don't know whether the polls, how accurate they are. I listened to the discussion earlier, and it made sense, but like somebody pointed out, so many people won't even answer the phone.
Yeah.
I don't know. But yes, I feel less optimistic than I would like. And I'm normally pretty optimistic. So the enthusiasm, the momentum of the movement for Obama in 2008 was really exciting. And it's definitely been tempered.
And you're feeling that fervor there. Let us pick it up. John, Mark. Mark, I'll come first to you. What about this issue of intensity? Intensity for each candidate, and then Jill points to intensity in her neighborhood of anti-Obama feeling. How's it play in?
Well, there's absolutely, the thing that the caller is perceiving, we see in the surveys, there's great intensity among Republicans about voting. But there's also Obama voters tend to be more enthusiastic about their candidate than Romney voters are about theirs. This matters. It always matters in every election. It's sort of an indicator of turnout. But it matters an awful lot more in an off-year election when turnout tends to be lower. You need only see those long lines at the early voting stations in urban areas to know there's pretty good intensity on all sides.
John, what about the idea of a tsunami that you guys just don't see somehow?
Certainly possible. I will say that this is, and to Jill's point, this is not 2008 by any stretch of the imagination. In 2008, you know, almost all of Barack Obama's supporters were very enthusiastic about his candidacy. For John McCain, it was about 35% very enthusiastic at this stage 4 years ago. Now you have far greater parity among each side's supporters. In the data we released yesterday, 69% of Obama's were very enthusiastic compared to 62% of Romney's. That's much closer parity than we saw 4 years ago. So it's a very different election. What we saw, and Mark points out, is that it may matter more in midterms than the presidential contest, but there's no question that it's a different election than it was 4 years ago.
It's interesting. People can live so deeply in a red or blue area that they can hardly see the enthusiasm for the other side. But there's Jill calling in and saying, you know, whoa, I'm seeing something I didn't see 4 years ago here in intensity, in her case, against the president.
And it does matter, you know, kind of where that support comes from and why people support different candidates. What we found in our polling in the summer was that 59% of Romney's supporters said that they were backing him mainly to be against Obama and 36% for Romney. What we found, you know, as we got – the election got closer, those numbers actually flipped, and 59% of Romney's supporters the last time we asked it were voting positively, affirmatively for their candidate, not just against Barack Obama. So that's another indicator of the enthusiasm that Republicans, you know, kind of gained over time for their candidate, which was just not the case 4 years ago.
Let's go to Chris in Manchester, New Hampshire. Chris, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great show.
Thanks.
I agree with the points that have been made that conservatives are voting for Romney, a lot of them, because they don't want Obama in there. But I disagree that there's enthusiasm for Romney. And coming from a conservative family who's voted Republican as long as I've been alive, I'm 33, and I go to what the media would call a fundamental church.
Okay.
So most people in my kind of churches have historically voted Republican. But what I'm seeing around me, and especially here in New Hampshire, is I don't think the enthusiasm for Romney is enough to carry him, and I think Obama will barely win, and it will be a repeat of when Nader cost Gore the election. I think at least in New Hampshire, we're going to see enough people who aren't enthusiastic about Romney going Gary Johnson or not voting or riding in Ron Paul or something else.
Interesting. What's the hesitation on Mitt Romney that you're seeing, Chris? What's the hesitation you're seeing in your conservative neighbors?
Well, I go from two angles, the college-age kids and then also the conservative people, like in my church or family. They're hesitant about his past, where when he was just south of us in Massachusetts, he was for abortion and against guns. And, of course, he did the government medical down there. And then as far as the college age, I see that a lot of kids my age just see that on civil liberties and foreign policy, both candidates are arguing specifics over the same strategy.
And not such a difference. So that is interesting. At least, you know, it's all depends exactly where you sit on the map, exactly what's in your neighborhood, on your block, in your community. But Chris, seeing some reluctance there, the opposite of fervor, maybe. Let's get one more from New Hampshire. Washington, New Hampshire. Grace is calling. Grace, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I'm an older white person in New Hampshire.
Okay.
And I'm for Obama, strongly so. I was before, and I am now. And I really don't see much of an enthusiasm gap. He had a meeting yesterday in Concord. I was not able to go because I'm a church organist. But nevertheless, there were 14,000 people in Concord. That's an amazing number of people. But I wanted to illustrate for you the ground game. I got a call last week. I'm 76 years old.
Okay.
I've always voted, but I've never worked on a campaign.
Yep.
I got a call last week from the Obama campaign in a nearby town where there's an office, and they asked if I would work on voting day. And I said, yes, I would. So tomorrow, for the first time, I'm going to make calls, and I'm going to bring people to the polls.
How did they find you, Grace? Are you a contributor at some point to the Obama campaign, or how do you think they got your name?
You know, I don't know. I have no idea how they got it, but they did have it, and They've got a wonderful ground game. My husband just got a report card from somewhere that told him he had voted 5 times in the last election. So congratulations on your voting.
People wow! They've got the numbers. Grace, 76 years old, and headed out to help get people to the polls for the first time in her life. Grace, thanks for your call. John, what about ground game? Is it equally? I mean. Is there a balance here in terms of the efficacy of ground game, and does it vary by state? You know, do the Obama camp have the advantage in some states, Romney in others? How's that look?
It's a great question. I mean, clearly the Obama campaign has more field offices, I think, across the battleground states than Mitt Romney does. They've targeted differently. The thing about the Obama campaign in terms of its effectiveness or its efficiency, if you will, the voters that they contact are far more apt to support Obama than, you know, versus Romney than the ones that Romney you know, contacts, whether that's because Obama's side is better at contacting them or more effective – better at contacting their supporters or people they think will be their supporters or are actually persuasive is kind of beside the point. They are reaching out to lots of people, and we've seen in our polling how effective it can be. Under 30 – voters age 18 to 29 who have been contacted by the Obama campaign are far more apt to be registered to vote and far more likely to say that they will actually vote or have already voted. So the contacts make a difference. On the point earlier about enthusiasm, the reason why the enthusiasm gap, if you will, is so interesting this year is it actually takes Democrats a little bit more enthusiasm, we found, to actually cast ballots than it does Republicans. So that narrowing that Romney has is significant on that side. But Obama's enthusiasm, the percentage of Obama's and supporters who are very enthusiastic about his candidacy has increased dramatically just in the past 4 weeks.
Mark, take us a little state by state here. We've had a couple of New Hampshire callers. What do you see there in the late polling here? In which way? That's a big, important swing. I mean, not so many electoral votes, but every one counts here. New Hampshire, Virginia, Florida, just to start where we may see first returns. What do they look like, Mark?
I would throw Colorado into that list. Those four would be the states that have been the closest all along in the polling.
Mm-hmm.
New Hampshire has tipped just a little bit in Obama's favor, more in the last week or so on some of these surveys. But you can find individual polls that have showed a tide. And again, I think it's important to remind everyone that, yeah, we have a lot of polls. This is still a close race. It's a close race in any of those states. It's a close race nationally. There was a caller before who said, you know, I feel sad that my vote doesn't count. Of course it counts. There have been, I think we looked at 11 or 12 national surveys that came out over the weekend, and every one of them was either a zero tie or a 47-48 tie or 1 point. In Obama's favor.
Look at Florida then, Mark. We've heard there's complaints over the weekend at the early voting. There wasn't enough access to the voting, people waiting for hours and hours and up in arms down in Miami-Dade. Does that make it inevitable that we're going to see some legal challenge? There's a suit already. Is that going to tangle up Florida? Because if it's that close and you've already got complaints, does that make some challenge inevitable?
Well, that may be. I can't speak to the to whatever complaints may come. I think if the race hangs on Florida, or I should say if the outcome is so close in Florida that a recount is necessary, I think it's likely that the overall race will be decided elsewhere. I am looking at that state. I think it's the one place where those of us who are pollsters are going to see a few questions answered about the importance of calling cell phones and more rigorous methods, because there's quite a range of result over the last week, polls in both directions, with the surveys that are doing the most rigorous calling of cell phones having more of an Obama lead and others less so.
Let's go north, John. What about Wisconsin, Minnesota? How do you see those at this point? Wisconsin, important swing state here. Minnesota, you know, Romney's been saying maybe. What about it?
Well, we don't have our own polling from those states, but following this election on Mark's excellent site, where you can divide up. Mark mentioned the great diversity in how people are calling. One of the great attributes of Mark's site is you can just look at the polls whose methodologies you think are more rigorous. And looking at across Wisconsin, there appeared to have been some narrowing in that contest. Of course, it was one state that Obama won by double digits 4 years ago. But more recently, and Mark can correct me if I'm misremembering, but we've seen Obama kind of open up a high single digit, or at least mid to high single digit advantage in that state. Minnesota is one where he's had a consistent advantage, although there's been discussion over the past week about whether Romney is expanding the map to include Minnesota for offensive reasons, as they say, or for defensive ones because of continued weakness in Ohio. And I think we just have to wait until tomorrow to see that. But Obama clearly has the edge in both.
So as you watch results come in tomorrow night, what are you going to be looking most keenly for, John? What are you going to be watching? What will be the first telltale signs to you?
Well, my job on election night is to parse the exit polls. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, kind of what I'll be doing first is looking at the exit polls nationally and in the key states that we've chosen to subscribe to. There'll be state-level exit polls in 31 states this year. It's the first time in five presidential election cycles there will not be 50 state exit polls, disappointing many election night watchers and some pollsters afterwards. Money, I think, is the overwhelming reason. These are very expensive to conduct.
Yep.
And, you know, in part it's because it's as we've been discussing this hour, it has become harder to conduct surveys, both on election day and, you know, adding the number of telephone polls you have to add to exit polls.
What will you look for in those exit polls?
I'll be looking for, you know, kind of, you know, how things have changed since 2008. Of course, you know, viewing the early exit polls skeptically, given the fact that they're just a few early voters on election day and don't include the people who vote in the evening. You know, but I'll be looking for changes from 08 and back to 04 and looking at data quality as I always do and then lining those up as the polls close with the actual results to help guide the election decision desk here at The Washington Post.
Mark, give us your view. Where is your periscope going to be pointed in those hours as results begin to come in? Where will you be looking first?
Well, I think I don't have the access to those wonderful exit polls that John does, but I'm going to be interested in the states whose polls close first, Virginia, Ohio, maybe Florida, just to see some indication as the votes are counted. I'll say this about exit polls. The interviews that are conducted now both at the polling places and on the phone with voters are not done so much. I think it's a little bit of a myth that they're done to try to call the outcome. The reality is they're too blunt an instrument to help us know who's, if the vote turns out to be as close in states like Ohio and Virginia as we think, the exit polls won't be any use. Their best value is in helping us figure out who voted, why they voted, and what the results mean on a larger scale.
Do you think we're going to know tomorrow night, Mark?
I think so, but I wouldn't bet everything I own on it.
John, what about it? Will we know by midnight, 2 a.m.? What do you think?
I'll say 2 a.m., 75% chance.
Okay. A pollster's final prognostication. John Cohen, Director of Polling and Polling Editor at The Washington Post. Thank you very much for being with us today, John.
Thank you, Tom.
And Mark Blumenthal, Senior Polling Editor at The Huffington Post. Thanks so much, Mark.
Thank you, Tom.
And with that, here we go. Go and vote. Make your choice. Thanks for being here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.